Halfway through the Saturday edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and of course our website. It's got the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio. That's available at IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Columbus Dispatch, we're pleased to welcome back to the program George Richards. George, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning, fellas. How are you?
Doing very well, George. Doing better than John Tortorella was last night. Boy, nice to see Torts go off like that. It's been a little bit of a, it's been a little while. You could see the frustration sort of building in the weeks and months since then, but last night he's finally blew a little bit. The Blue Jackets lose 2-1 on home ice to the Philadelphia Flyers, a crucial game in their goal to get back into a playoff spot, and Mount Tortorella exploded post-game. Your thoughts on Tortorella's comments?
Well, I think we've seen worse from Tortorella's days with the Rangers. I just think he just was exasperated, frustrated, and it was like, what do I do with this? You know, the guys came out listless and not really doing a whole lot after a couple really strong games. They came out flat and against the Flyers on home ice in a big game in the Metropolitan Division, a game that everybody, you know, knows is important. And they end up escaping with 1 point, honestly. The way they played, you almost have to be thankful for that if you're the Blue Jackets, because they didn't look very good. They didn't really challenge Michael Nyberg the whole lot. I mean, he made some pretty key saves at some big moments, but for the first 40 minutes of that game, the Blue Jackets didn't create a whole lot.
George, Cam Atkinson got the lone goal for the Blue Jackets this year, his 10th goal of the year. It's been a rough year for him, as you know. What's gone wrong for Atkinson this year, in your opinion?
Well, there's been a whole collection of guys like Cam Atkinson, guys that the Blue Jackets have counted on that haven't really performed up to their expectations or up to their contracts, honestly. And, you know, the Blue Jackets have stated that they're going to stay the course with these guys, that they're not going to let, you know, a rough season cloud their vision with these guys. And they almost have to say that because these guys are locked into long-term deals. And maybe they are starting to turn the corner. I think you're looking at a guy like Brandon Dubinsky. You know, they put him with Josh Anderson, and they're playing well. Alexander Winberg's starting to put up some points. Cam Atkinson's now starting to score a little bit. He's had some injury concerns earlier in the year. You know, he said he wanted to flip the reset button when he came back, and he's been putting up some decent numbers. So, you know, maybe the patience that the Blue Jackets have shown is starting to pay off, because some of these guys, Nick Foligno, the team captain, is another guy who's been able to put up some points in the last couple weeks. These guys are starting to come around, and the Columbus Blue Jackets absolutely 100% need them to, because this team is not going to be in a playoff team unless their core guys start producing points, and right now they at least are doing so.
So, George, with 9 days to the trade deadline, what do you see Blue Jackets GM Jarmo Kekäläinen doing with as it approaches?
Well, they've told us that they don't want to deal their first-round pick since they sent one to Las Vegas last year. I don't know. I mean, it depends on how close they think they are. They've got to make something, I feel. I mean, you look at this team, they still, other than the 10 goals they scored in a two-game span against New Jersey I forget the other team they got four against. But anyway, they scored 10 goals in two games. Other than that, this team doesn't score a whole lot. They need some help offensively. They've got defensive depth. If Ryan Murray returns in the coming days, which you know, they keep waiting on him to come back from a back injury, that gives them even more defensive depth. And they've got Jack Johnson, as you know, as an unrestricted free agent. You know, he's a piece that they can deal off. You know, there's talk about Jack Johnson for a draft pick. That doesn't help this team. I mean, unless this team is 7 points out of the playoffs, they're not. I don't feel that dealing for a draft pick is going to help any way, shape, or form. They need some players. They need some offensive help. They need some forward help. I think that's what you're going to see from Columbus.
George Richards is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. George covers the Columbus Blue Jackets for the Columbus Dispatch. George, I'll be honest with you. We were sitting here on the show last Saturday, and, you know, as we were preparing for the show, I happened to look at the Blue Jackets, and I was shocked. I, you know, don't cover the Blue Jackets, don't watch the Blue Jackets necessarily as part of my regular NHL watching, but this is a team that we saw in Winnipeg in October come in and absolutely dominate the Winnipeg Jets. And from October 1st through November 30th, they were fourth in the NHL, 16-8-1 record. Since December 1st, though, they've been bottom five in the entire NHL, and that's what came as a shock to us last week here on the program. What's gone wrong for this Blue Jackets team since that sort of November 30th, December 1st cutoff?
This team was legit back then. I remember that game in Winnipeg. They were flying. They came at the Jets with everything they had. That might be the most complete game the Blue Jackets have played all season. I look back at a game in Boston where they got just totally blown out of the building. Boston was a 500 team at the time. Boston hadn't done anything special. You were wondering what was going on with the Bruins, if, you know, maybe their run, you know, a little bit over there. And they beat the heck out of the Blue Jackets, and then now you see what Boston's done. That seems to have turned around Boston's season, and I think it kind of, I don't know, maybe sent the Blue Jackets into a little bit of a tailspin. Now, they've had some injury issues. They lost three forwards within a span of a week or 10 days, and Dubinsky, Atkinson, and Wenberg. They played without those guys for a month to 6 weeks. That didn't help things. And again, like I said before, the guys that they were counting on to do a lot didn't do a whole lot for a long part of the season, just now starting to catch up to that. So, you know, they've definitely had their struggles. They changed their game plan. They changed their style of play just to kind of tread water in the Metropolitan Division. And you look at them right now, they're still right there in the mix of this thing. Had they beaten Philadelphia in regulation yesterday, they'd be in a lot better shape. But, you know, there's still a lot of games to be left for this team, a lot of games against Metro Division opponents. This is a team that still could get into the top three in the Metro, if not one of the two wild cards, because it's going to be the five Metro teams. I mean, unless the Florida Panthers, you know, make some incredible run here, it's going to be five Metro and three Atlantic teams. So I think right now the Blue Jackets realistically just have to look at the Islanders, the Rangers, and Carolina as their rivals and, you know, try and get into that top five in the Atlantic, in the Metro.
George, you mentioned defenseman Ryan Murray earlier in your answer, and he's been out of the lineup, as you know, since late November. And, you know, this is a second overall pick from back in 2012, the same year the Jets drafted Trouba. And he's only played one full year in the NHL. And, you know, every time I watch him play, I mean, the skill is evident. He can skate like the wind, and he is obviously a talented player. Absolutely. But at what point, you know, do the Columbus Blue Jackets maybe look at, you know, his injury concerns and, you know, maybe start to reevaluate, you know, his long-term future with the team?
Well, I think you've got to give it some time. And will he ever live up to that lofty draft pick? I don't know. I mean, some guys don't. I mean, some guys have terrific careers. Some guys who are drafted high like that end up having great NHL careers, but yet never live up to being picked that high in a draft. And that could be the case here with Ryan Murray, but I still think he's a young guy with a tremendous amount of upside. I think John Tortorella is a little frustrated with him being out of the lineup so long, but it seems like it's a back injury. You don't want to mess with those kind of things, I guess. We're going to have to wait and see for his short-term prognosis. I mean, he's been out here skating with the team for about, you know, 10 days, almost 2 weeks. We just keep waiting to see when he's going to be back. He could be back tomorrow for all we know. So, you know, he looks to be close, but we've said that for a while now. Now, as far as long-term goes, I believe he's restricted free agent, so he's still under team control for a little bit. You know, that'll be interesting to see where they go with that. But they've got a lot invested in him, like you said, second overall pick a few years back. You look at his upside, you think that he's part of this moving forward. I would think he is. Good, strong defensemen who can skate and who can pass are a hot commodity in this league. And you've got one here, and I think you make him part of it.
You know, George, the father of Pierre-Luc Dubois, Eric Dubois, is an assistant coach here with the Manitoba Moose. So we hear about Eric, we hear about Pierre-Luc a little bit more about than sure. some of the other Blue Jackets forwards, perhaps. But how would you assess his rookie season so far with Columbus?
Oh, I think it's been strong. I think he's a guy that came into camp trying to earn a bottom six role. And about 2 months ago, he became their top-line center and hasn't let go of that. I think he's been playing with Artemi Panarin, and he was playing with Josh Anderson for a while. That was the top line until Torts felt that it got stale a little bit, slid Josh Anderson down to the third line where he seems better suited with that big body, and he seems to play better that down there. I think Pierre-Luc Dubois has been terrific this year. You know, not on anybody's rookie of the year lists. I mean, but he has had a strong rookie campaign, has become a legit top-end center for the Blue Jackets, a guy they count on every single night. He's able to put the puck in the net. He's able to facilitate the puck. Playing with Artemi Panarin definitely helps, but I think he's had a terrific season. I think he surprised them a little bit. I think he's ahead of schedule as far as they're concerned. They did project him to be this type of a player, just not this soon. And I think his maturity, like you said, his dad's a coach. His dad, you know, calls him and critiques his game a little bit. I think that extra bit of coaching has helped. He's a very fundamentally sound player, mature, you know, seems like a very mature young man. I enjoy talking with him. You could talk to him on a variety of subjects. He's a very nice guy. I think he's been a terrific story here and a guy that the Blue Jackets are going to count on for a long time.
George, we'll let you go on this last question. One of the sort of more bizarre stories of the season has been Brandon Dubinsky. You know, in October, he gets stripped of his alternate captaincy. Then when the team is on the road, he's, you know, set close to returning to the lineup. They're in Vegas, and he gets sent home for a personal matter, a supposedly career-threatening personal matter, according to Aaron Portsline, who reported that. He comes back into the lineup. You know, it's just been a bizarre season for Brandon Dubinsky. What do you make of that season and that circumstance?
Yeah, it's definitely been a weird thing, and Brandon didn't really put the rumors to rest either. I mean, he had an opportunity. He left the team on a Tuesday in Las Vegas, and that was the All-Star break was coming up. His agent said it was because of the All-Star break. People within the organization said that Doobie was going to play that Thursday in Arizona, so it was kind of odd timing that he would leave the team. They could have said, hey, it was about his eye. He wanted to go get checked up. They didn't. The team said, we cannot talk about this, which leads you to believe that it was a CBA-related off-the-ice, quote-unquote, medical issue. And Brandon didn't really put any of that to bed. He just said, I'm not going to talk about it, and, believe what you want to believe, and yada, yada, yada. He came back and right after the All-Star break, as his agent said he would, and has played well, centering the third line. Now with Josh Anderson, that line seems to be creating some juice and playing with some jam and doing some good things. All things are, I think the Blue Jackets are keeping an eye on things, but so far so good. Dubinsky, another one of those guys that struggled. When they took the A off his sweater, I believe it was 8 or 9 games into the season, John Tortorella said it was because, they wanted him to focus on his game. He had 1 point in his first 8 games. And maybe it was something else, something other than just his game. So we'll just have to wait and see. He's tied down. He's got a long-term deal here. That's just something that the Blue Jackets are going to keep an eye on. We're all going to keep an eye on it. But right now, Dubinsky's playing well. And again, he's another one of these guys that the Blue Jackets are counting on as they move forward in these final 25 games, whatever it is.
George Richards covers the Columbus Blue Jackets for the Columbus Dispatch. George, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks for joining us.
You got it. Thanks a lot, fellas. We'll see you.
We'll see you soon. When we come back, we're going to discuss the Vancouver Canucks. They sign their general manager, Jim Benning, to a contract extension. Hasn't gone over so well in the West Coast. We talk about that next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are For the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
10 minutes before the top of the hour, Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuka, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. Still to come on the program, Kristen Anderson. She covers the Calgary Flames. Talk to her coming up at the top of the hour. And at the bottom of the next hour, Kelly McCrimmon, assistant general manager of the Vegas Golden Knights, is going to join us. Vancouver Canucks decided to hand out a contract extension to Jim Benning. He's been their general manager since the summer of 2014. He's compiled a 131, 138, and 33 record in his stint as general manager. The Canucks have been a bottom five team in his entire tenure with the franchise. Ezzy, are you surprised that Benning got a contract extension? He was set to be an unrestricted free agent at season's end. You'd heard talk about maybe Ken Holland.
Are GMs unrestricted free agents?
Well, sure, why not? He was set to become a free agent at season's end. How about that? How about free agent?
Sure.
Yeah. I guess there's no RFAs. Yeah. Fair point. There was talk about Ken Holland.
I'm just bugging you.
I know. There was talk about maybe Ken Holland going to Vancouver. You know, he's, of course, from British Columbia. But they end up re-signing Jim Benning instead. You know, unfinished business, you know, is sort of what they were talking about. Are you surprised he got a contract extension? Is this a deserving contract extension?
Well, let me answer the former there. I'm not surprised that he signed a contract extension. I mean, Jim Benning and Trevor Linden are in place there, and they're entrenched as the brain trust there for the Canucks. And let's be honest, I mean, we didn't expect the Canucks to be a playoff team this year. I definitely did not expect the Canucks to be a playoff team this year. And this is a young rebuilding team. And, you know, the Sedins are in the last year of their contracts. I would expect them to sign with the Canucks, Drew, for either 1 or 2 years. They're going to finish their careers in Vancouver. We've talked to Ed Willis about this. We've talked to Ben Kuzma about this. Mike Halford, who works there for TSN 1040. I mean, this is basically the Sedins and then the next wave of young talent, right? So you're talking about Bo Horvat. You're talking about Brock Besser. You're talking about Jake Virtanen. And, you know, there are other players coming up through the system as well that are going to get an opportunity next year for the Canucks. So not surprised at all. Is he deserving? I think, you know, that's a question that, you know, is difficult for me to answer. You know, I don't cover the Canucks, you know, obviously, and you know, for me, there are some moves that I've questioned that he's made. Louis Erickson, for example, is a contract that I think, you know, they gave him, I think, a little bit too much money, in my opinion. I don't necessarily think that he's a $6 million a year player. And, you know, you could question, you know, why do you bring in players like Michael Delzato and Sam Gagne and Thomas Vanek if you're a rebuilding team? But, you know, the answer to that could easily be, well, you still have to have, you know, good veteran hockey players on your team, you know, to surround the young players. But no, overall, Drew, I'm not surprised because, you know, Benning's been there for 3 years now. And as you talked about, I mean, they're just beginning this rebuild. It's going to take, you know, in my opinion, at least a couple of years before this gets back on the right track.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Farhan Lalji and Jason Botchford, who both cover the Canucks in Vancouver, you know, Botchford with the Vancouver Province, Farhan with TSN, you know, we're going to play their audio. And they talked about how they're not surprised that Benning got the extension. They were surprised, though, that Linden and Benning both said that they're going to stick with the status quo approach. You know, I guess because the status quo hasn't really worked in the 3 years that Benning has been the general manager. So here's what Botchford and Farhan Lalji had to say about the Benning extension.
Joined by Jason Botchford of the Vancouver Province. And Jason, we now have a little bit of certainty heading into the trade deadline. We know that Jim Benning is going to be the general manager of this team for reportedly the next 3 years. But what were your takeaways from today's announcement?
Well, I'm certainly not surprised that Jim is coming back and got an extension. I am a bit surprised that the team is kind of pitching a status quo. I think that that's going to be a hard sell in the city. I think that that's going to be a difficult sell to the fan base because I don't know if you've heard, but things haven't been going too well here in Vancouver with the Canucks. They've been going swimmingly, and I think that along the way in the first 4 years, there have been mistakes, and I think you can learn from those mistakes. I think that you can make some changes to the front office, to the way you do things. And so the most surprising part of it all to me is them saying, well, we're just going to keep on the same treadmill that we've been on for the past 4 years.
and where it's gotten them is another bottom five finish and potentially a high draft pick. So as we look back at the first 4 years of Jim Benning as the Canucks, Jim, what are some of the highs and lows?
Well, I think you got to start with the prospect pool, and they've added some promising guys that are coming in the near future. This is Jim's area of expertise. They've kind of fixed the draft here with the Vancouver Canucks. But on the flip side of that, they've added some veterans through trade and free agency who have kind of face-planted with this team, who haven't been very good, who they've given up assets, they've paid assets to get these guys. And one of the real issues that I have is that they keep preaching draft and develop, but over the 4 years, over their four drafts, they've had 28 picks, which is the allotment that every team gets. A rebuilding team, a team that is going to have success by drafting players and those players developing, you need to get more picks. So I actually hope that that's one area in the next 3 years that they change.
You know, I was going to say, Drew, I mean, I don't necessarily disagree with Jason Botchford, but we talked about, you know, some of their prospects. You look at Thatcher Demko, who was drafted in the second round 4 years ago. He's playing really well. Dave can tell you he's having a great season for the Utica Comets. Olli Juolevi, drafted fifth overall back in 2016. He's having a really good rookie year in the Finnish league. Elias Pettersson is over a point per game in the Swedish league. So they do have prospects coming up through the system, and not just prospects. I would argue that those are A-level prospects. So again, you know, the Canucks aren't going to make the playoffs this year. I wouldn't be surprised if they don't make the playoffs again next year, because they're going to be a young team again next year. But as some of these players like Jake Virtanen, Brock Besser, Bo Horvat, they get older, I think the future is bright for the Canucks. And it kind of reminds you a little bit of the Jets. Fans were starting to get frustrated with the team missing the playoffs year after year. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you believe in what they're trying to build, draft, and develop. And, you know, Jim Benning has a great record as an assistant general manager with the Boston Bruins, and previous to that, across the league before that. So, you know, I do think that their prospect pool is good, and it's going to take some time. Right now, I mean, they're not a very good team, but, you know, they're trying to build this back up.
Well, the difference, though, is, as and, you know, you mentioned that, you know, their drafting, is that, you know, they went out and, you know, Jason Botchford alluded to it, they went out and signed these veteran players for some reason, and they weren't, you never knew if they were bottoming out or if they were trying to be, you know, when they signed Louis Erickson, that one was such a puzzlement, because nobody thought that the Canucks were good enough to be a, you know, really anything other than maybe at best a fringe playoff team when they signed Louis Erickson. It's turned out to be a pretty disastrous signing. He hasn't brought anything to the table. The team has been lousy since then. It made you wonder if Benning really understood what the team needed or if he had done a fair evaluation. And Trevor Linden, a lot of people have said that in his role as president of the organization, he's overmatched. You know, this is a guy who had no front office experience. He just, you know, was a great player for the Canucks. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you need to be, you know, an executive with nobody else to respond to. So you had this rookie executive in Trevor Linden. You had a rookie general manager in Jim Benning, albeit who had success as an assistant general manager. And you looked at the structure and you said, is this team, are they overmatched? Are they not good enough to be, you know, is the brain trust of the organization not good enough? And 3 years later, I don't know that they're any better off than they were before.
Oh, I think they're absolutely better off. And I agree with you. I think at the time they signed Louis Erickson, Drew, I don't think they knew that they were rebuilding. But at least now, maybe they don't say it enough, but they know that they're rebuilding. They've known that for quite some time. I would say they've known that for well over a year. So I do think they're going in the right direction. But right now, it's frustrating. If you're a Canucks fan, you know your team's not going to the playoffs. You know most likely your team's not going to be that great next year. Maybe they squeak into the playoffs, but they're going to be young, and I don't think there are going to be high expectations next year. It's going to be 2 or 3 years. And, you know, we should mention, too, they're going to get another high draft pick this year.
Well, Dave, how about that? You know, it's been 2 or 3 years of bottom five finishes for the Canucks. Mm-hmm. And you have your general manager and your president coming out and pleading for patience. Linden releasing a letter to season ticket holders or to the, you know, talking about patience, and they talk about the status quo. Can you understand why talking about the status quo when you've been bottom five for 3 years in a row would go over like a fart in church?
Okay. Well, I'm going to have to think about that last one. But It's a good thing I don't go to church. But anyways, no, of course I can understand that. No fan base is patient. I mean, if look at Winnipeg. I mean, everybody wants the Stanley Cup. I mean, every Canadian market is demanding of that.
But look where the Jets are now. That's my point.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. But it doesn't matter because we live in an instant gratification society. So nobody has... No, we do. I'm not...
Look, Hold on, let me check my roll up the rim to win.
So the fact of the matter is that it's very difficult to tell a fan base that they have to wait, because we're not talking you have to wait a minute. You have to wait a while. These are prospects who have to develop, especially in the ones in Utica. And the one mistake that franchises make, and we saw it with Atlanta, is when you rush prospects.
Yep.
I mean, I spoke about it. I tweeted about it last night. I thought Kyle Connor getting a year in the AHL with the Manitoba Moose was the best thing that could have ever happened to his development. If he would have played with the Winnipeg Jets last year and had his confidence, I'm not saying he couldn't have come back from it. I'm simply saying that it was a huge benefit to Kyle Connor. Similarly, if Jack Roslovic had played this entire season with the Manitoba Moose, it wouldn't have been a bad thing. And I'm just saying that the Jets now have the luxury of the depth to play these guys now as opposed to needing to play them and throw them in like we saw with Evander Kane, we saw with Zach Bogosian. So, yes, it's not going to be easy. And when you have a middling message and you're not clear about this is what we're doing, then the fan base is right to be a little bit upset, because the fact of the matter is, if you're saying we're still going for it, but we're also rebuilding – but in reality, you're rebuilding, then just say you're rebuilding. Fans are too smart nowadays. They pay too much attention to think, to not be able to see plainly what a team is doing.
When we come back, Kristen Anderson joins us to talk about the Calgary Flames. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, and Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website has got the latest Jets and Moose news and audio. That's available at IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program from the Calgary Herald. She covers the Calgary Flames, Kristen Anderson. And I guess, Kristen, first and foremost, congratulations.
Thank you. For those of you listening, I got married during All-Star break, so I'm now Kristen Anderson, which is a lot more confusing for my readers than I actually thought it would be, but yes, that's my new name.
Welcome to the beat, they're all saying. They're like, I'm still the same person I was before.
Yeah, Kristen, I actually thought it was a pseudonym.
Well, and it's funny because a lot of people are like, oh, well, you know, I enjoyed your stuff. Like, I hope you're doing something great. Like as if I'm like falling off the map. Like, I just got married. Like, I'm not like falling off the professional map. So,
well, once you got your check mark back, Kristen, we knew you were legit.
Oh man, that was like half a battle. I don't know, for those of you that are listening, like when you change your name on Twitter, you lose all your legitimacy. So I lost my blue check mark, which isn't, you don't think like it's a big deal, but I mean, it is kind of a big deal. You are kind of proud of it. So it took a little while, but I got it back, thankfully.
There you go, Kristen. Obviously, we brought you on to talk about the Calgary Flames, and the Flames, they reside in a playoff spot in the Pacific Division, and we'll talk about the playoff race. But before that, they made some news off the ice last night when they re-signed Mikael Backlund to a six-year, $32.1 million contract extension. He was set to be a free agent at season's end. You know, obviously, this is a player who probably goes a little underappreciated throughout the NHL. He's a Selke Trophy. You know, he should be in the conversation for the Selke Trophy, at least. Why is he so important to the Calgary Flames?
You said it right there. I mean, a potential Selke, you know, he finished, I can't remember where he finished in the Selke voting, fourth in Selke voting last year. So he's kind of an underrated two-way centerman. I mean, he's kind of gaining some, I think people are starting to take notice of what he's able to do. He's playing against the league's top lines on every night. So him on a line with Michael Frolik and Matthew Tkachuk, he's brought stability to that line. Hasn't had a great past couple of games. I haven't really noticed him, from an offensive perspective. But make no mistake, he's scored 104 goals and 158 assists for 262 points in 519 career appearances for the Flames. So he's solid. He's a second line, a good second line centerman, behind Sean Monahan. And to have him locked up through his 35th birthday, I think at the price it is, he's part of a core that the Calgary Flames have established now. You have Sean Monahan, you have Johnny Gaudreau, you have Mark Giordano, Dougie Hamilton isn't going anywhere anytime soon. So you have these key pieces that you're able to build a team around. And, for quite some time, Michael Backlund has been kind of an integral part of the team. And they've known that they were going to sort of have him as a little bit of stability to build around. But to get him for the price, that they're going to get him at, like salary cap hit of $5.35 million per year, is a really, really good deal for the Flames. So you have to hand it to Brad for Living to get that negotiation done. I'm surprised that it happened so quickly, which goes to show, either Michael Backlund's willingness to stay, willing to either take a bit of a discount, if you can look at it that, to have some stability. He's getting married in the off season, so he's looking to sort of have some stability here in the city. And he's been here. He was drafted in the 2007 draft, in the first round, and is probably going to retire in a Flames jersey, I would think. So it's good for the Flames, it's good for Backlund, and it provides a little bit of stability on both sides.
Kristen, you mentioned Matthew Tkachuk there in your answer, and you mentioned he's playing on a line with Michael Backlund and Michael Frolik. He had a big game the other night against Nashville, scoring a goal and an assist, and then a few games back, he scored two goals against the Islanders. He's red hot as of late, and when you consider that, he had the suspension back in December for spearing, is he starting to mature? Are you seeing a player that's starting to mature in his second season? Not saying that, Matthew Tkachuk isn't going to be, an antagonist and a physical player, but are you starting to see that maturity in his game?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that and it's come very, very quickly. I mean, this is his second year in the league, and for a guy that plays the way that Matthew Tkachuk plays, on the edge, a little bit of an antagonist, like you said, he's pretty annoying in front of the net, and he mixes this up. He's not afraid to mix it up with the league's top players, and he's starting to become this kind of villain, I would put him in the same sort of vein as Brad Marchand. He wants to win. He wants to win a cup with the Calgary Flames, and he's also able to score. Like he practices during the morning skate. At the end of every morning skate, he will tip pucks. Like he will stand in front of the net and just tip pucks for at least about 10 minutes. Like he'll just go one after the other and you've seen that payoff. Like he's able to score on those types of situations. So the other night, he tips in, I believe it was a Matthew Tkachuk or Mark Giordano point shot, Dougie Hamilton point shot. It's how he's able to get, 21 goals already in 56 games. He's 41 points this season. So he's a smart player too. You saw it on Mark Jankowski's goal the other night as well. He just is able to be patient and knows how to set up the play and just kind of can read a play before it happens and knows where to be. And, you just can't teach that kind of stuff. Like you either have it or you don't. And, yes, there's some disciplinary issues at the beginning of the season and you know what, he's going to walk that fine line his entire career, I assume, but he's starting to sort of get it and get what he can get away with and the timing of things and when he can and can't do, say things and, give guys extra kind of taps. And it's an element that the Flames didn't have for the longest time. And I think they're incredibly lucky to have, a key piece like Matthew Tkachuk. That's another guy who they're for sure going to have to sign. And I wouldn't wait with him for sure.
You know, Kristen, the Flames are one of the best, if not what the best, road team in the NHL right now. And, you know, they went into Nashville, which isn't an easy building to play in, beat them in regulation. What has been the secret to the success of the Calgary Flames on the road this season?
I think they play a little bit of a simple game. When they're playing at home, they try to be a little bit too fancy and get a little bit caught up in impressing the home fans. I think they've had some incredible success on the road this season. They're the second best road record in the league. So I've seen some inconsistencies. If you watch them every day, in Boston, you're playing against one of the best teams in the league, and that's who your measuring stick should be against. And their power play went 1-for-5 against one of the league's best penalty kills. So you take that into consideration. But still, like, if you want to be a team that's going to compete with the Winnipeg Jets of the world and the Western Conference, like you want to compete against Anaheim Ducks, when it comes down the stretch, like they're going to have those little details shored up, especially at home. But to have the success that they do on the road, I think is kind of in their back pocket. So they're also very good in overtime. Their third periods have kind of crumbled a little bit. They've allowed a couple late goals recently. I want to say in their game against Boston and their game against the New York Rangers at Madison Square Garden. Those two games, the third period was a little bit shaky for my liking. So when you look at going deep in the playoffs and how you can do that, you need to have those little elements of your game shored up. But certainly on the road, it's a little bit more polished. Their game is a little more polished than it is at home.
Kristen Anderson is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're discussing the Calgary Flames with Kristen as she covers the team for the Calgary Herald. Kristen, the Flames are in a dogfight in the Western Conference playoff race. That Pacific Division is so tight. They're 2 points behind the Sharks, but they have the Anaheim Ducks and the LA Kings, so they're breathing right down their necks. What's going to be the secret for the Flames' success over the final 20-24 games of the regular season here? What's going to be the difference maker for this Flames to be a playoff team versus them falling out of the playoffs?
First of all, they need to get Mike Smith healthy again. Mm-hmm. He skated this morning before the team stepped on the ice. They're scheduled to play the Florida Panthers tonight. They step on the ice in about 15 minutes, but Mike Smith was on the ice this morning, so that's a good sign. He was upright and walking the other night in Nashville. Another good sign that his injury isn't as bad as originally feared when he was kind of rolling around on the ice on Sunday on the island in Brooklyn against the New York Islanders. He was injured with like 1.1 seconds left in the game. So I think every single heart in Calgary basically stopped beating for like a minute when they saw him looking like he was in incredible pain on the ice. So he had some tests done. It's not a groin injury, and it's not as bad as they originally feared. I would guess, like, just out of power of elimination, it's likely a knee that's been bugging him or just tweaked, but I don't know that for sure. So, just needs a bit of time to, which worked well in his favor because David Rittich was able to come in and get a couple of games under his belt in relief, which is important and was important for David Rittich to get that. So to have good goaltending and have Mike Smith healthy again, I think that's what the Flames are going to need to get to the next level and to get into the playoffs, but also to maybe do some damage in the playoffs. They also need, their first line has been great all year. Johnny Gaudreau has played out of his mind. He's had a career season, second in league scoring. They have to have that, their first line going and stepping up in key situations. And then they have to have some consistency from the rest of their group. Like, their third line has, kind of been under fire under in recent games. They've played great in the last three, basically since Glenn Gallatin called them invisible against the New York Rangers. They've really stepped up. So that's Mark Jankowski, Sam Bennett, and Garnet Hathaway. Troy Brower was on that line briefly, for a while, but he broke his cheekbone the other night in New Jersey, absorbing a shot kind of in the first few seconds of that game, so he's out for a little while. But they need some consistency in their scoring and their power play. Their power play has been a struggle all year without Christopher Stieg, especially in the last couple of months. They need to get that figured out. They had some nice bounces against the Nashville Predators, so hopefully they're feeling a little more confident. And that's really goes to show how important your power play is and how much momentum it can generate, because you know, if they don't score on that 5-on-3 against Nashville, you know, it's a totally different story. So power play, goaltending, and having depth in scoring, I think that's what the Flames are going to need to get in the playoffs.
Now, Kristen, you mentioned Mike Smith is going to be back in the lineup soon, and David Rittich picked up a win in that game against the Predators. Has this maybe, you know, been a bit of a pleasant surprise for Brad Treliving and Brian Burke? I mean, John Gillies is obviously, you know, the goaltending prospect of the future. He's been playing the last couple of years with the Stockton Heat in the American Hockey League. But does this maybe make them rethink maybe needing to acquire a backup goalie maybe at the trade deadline?
I think it's definitely given them some stability and some like comfort in knowing that David Rittich is a solid backup netminder. He's an interesting story because they found him in the Czech League. They were actually scouting another player, Daniel Pribble, who is in Stockton with the Flames right now, and they just couldn't kind of get enough of watching this David Rittich. So one of their scouts, Derek McKenzie, sent some tape over to the Flames goaltending coach, Jordan Sigalette, and said, hey, you got to look at this guy. And then so Jordan Sigalette said, yeah, sure. And then looked at some more tape, and then was like, yeah, you should get a hold of this guy and try to sign him. So 25 years old, hasn't played hardly at all in the National Hockey League other than one game last year. And then, of course, 12 games this season. So, he's been definitely a nice surprise. They got him, they signed him, in the summer last year, 2016. And then he played his first season in North America with the Stockton Heat last year. So, and he's just cool. Like, he's a cool as a cucumber kind of guy. Doesn't get too rattled. He's excited. He has a great attitude. And he is able to read plays it's an underrated skill for a goalie to be able to read plays like David Rittich is able to read plays. And he can anticipate shots before they happen and kind of knows what guys are going to do before they do it. He had a little bit of a doozy against Nashville the other night, and he even admitted, like, he tried to play the puck like Mike Smith plays the puck, and it didn't work. Basically passed it right to the Nashville player, and then Nick Bonino scored, so he was super guilty about that the other night. But it's a nice surprise that you have for the Flames in the sense that they haven't had a backup goalie at least, that they feel comfortable enough to play if Mike Smith can't go. And this on Thursday night against Nashville, it was his second straight game ever. And he's going to need to do that down the stretch. Like, you need to give Mike Smith some reprieve. So they just can't ride him and expect him to just, you know, they need him to be fresh for the playoffs. So it definitely been a nice surprise. And David Rittich is emerging as an interesting storyline for the Flames this year in net.
Kristen Anderson covers the Calgary Flames for the Calgary Herald. Kristen, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure, Kristen. We'll do it again real soon. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN Radio 1290. The segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. If you're looking for a place to catch the game, Bernstein's Deli's got you covered. They got the big screen TVs. They got great food and drink specials. It's hashtag Hockey Night at Bernstein's. Check it out, bernsteinsdeli.com.
Order 100 Illegal Curve sandwiches.
Well, you, Ezzy and Dave, you're, of course, welcome to join us on Tuesday as well. Our buddy, Josh Cooper, is going to be in town Tuesday afternoon. He's been demanding a trip to Bernstein's for an Illegal Curve sandwich. So he's in town covering the Kings. So if you're looking for us for lunch on Tuesday, it'll be at Bernstein's Deli.
But it's on you, though, right?
No, I was just going to dine and dash.
All right.
Okay, there you go. War of words. You know, some divorces are more pleasant than others. The divorce between the Montreal Canadiens and PK Subban is certainly not one that has been, friendly for the kids, as they were to say. The war of words heated up last Saturday after Brendan Gallagher and PK Subban went back and forth throughout the Predators' victory over the Canadiens. Here's what happened post-game between Gallagher and Subban.
You had a heck of a battle with PK in Nashville. How would you characterize the one you had with him tonight?
I don't know why you're asking about him. I think he was, they got a lot of good players. They got, what was he? Minus one in the game. They have a lot of other reasons why we lost tonight. It was another good team. Great goalie. A couple guys in the back end. Ekholm and Josi that are probably elite players, and a lot of guys up front that can hurt you. So they're a good team. We just didn't really have enough, but we battled hard tonight and just didn't get the result. Yeah, it's just, battling hard. I think he was talking, doing what he does, but I don't know. Like I said, I don't know why we're talking about him. That's kind of what he wants. He came in here, tried to make it about PK Subban, which is, what he does. We're going to focus on our team and lost the game, try and regroup and go from there. Like I said, I don't know why we're talking about him. That's what he wants. You can let him talk about himself all night. I'm sure he'll give you guys enough lines. I'm not going to help that out.
Okay, how bad did you miss Galley?
You know what? I miss those two guys. Amolis Pricey and Chucky, and guys that I keep in touch with pretty regularly since I've been here. And I'm happy they came over to see me. Last time it was a little bit of a mess. So can't wait to finish up with you guys. So let's keep it short.
What did Galley say to you after the goal?
I don't think he said anything to me after the goal, no. But some guys from the bench were saying stuff. But I couldn't hear it. It's so loud in this building, the way it is. But I'm sure it's pretty quiet over there right now with 2 points on our side.
How did Brendan Gallagher smile?
I didn't see a smile from him tonight. To be honest with you, I just saw the blood dripping down his face after he tried to hit me and fell down. So that's what I saw. I didn't see anything else. Other than that, it was just a normal game as usual, just competing in the battles and that's it, just trying to outwork the other guy on the other side.
Did you feel like you had a bit of a target on your back end? Start on the very first play with Delorier, it seemed like Gallagher, a lot of the players seemed to come at you quite a bit.
Well, when you're a guy that plays a lot of minutes and you're one of the better players on the ice, I'm used to having a target on my back, so that doesn't faze me. At the end of the day, I'm smiling now because we got 2 points. That's all that matters.
We're fueled by hate here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, but the hate between Brendan Gallagher and PK Subban is significant.
I thought we were fueled by cured meats.
Well, that too. cured meats that hate our arteries. How about that? But
I love that stuff, Drew.
That's great back and forth.
That is great back and forth.
Yeah.
And, Brendan Gallagher, I watched that game and he scored a goal. And Gallagher, by the way, is having a great year. 21 goals, one of the best players for the Habs in a year in which not many players are having great years.
No, for
PK Subban, we know he's one of the best defensemen in the league. But that's just two guys that are competitive and they want to win.
There's two guys who don't like each other. And PK Subban definitely does not like a lot of players, I think, on that Habs team and in that Habs dressing room.
Well, we don't know that.
Well, you can read between the lines pretty clearly here, Ezzy. And that they, that they traded PK Subban away to Nashville. Not because of his performance on the ice, but because of his impact on that dressing room. And I think it's a remarkably short-sighted decision by the Montreal Canadiens.
You think?
You think?
Yeah, I'm able to make. I'm able to make that
determination. It's a pretty astute assessment.
I know. You know, got to be on the radio to make a professional opinion like that count. But they made that decision in a very short-sighted manner, and the Nashville Predators have been way better off as a result. The Montreal Canadiens have been way worse off as a result. And you can give me 100 PK Subbans on my team, and I'll take him over Brendan Gallagher any day of the week and twice on Sundays.
Well, obviously, you would take 100 of PK Subban versus one Brendan Gallagher.
I'm gonna take. You know what? Some days,
PK Subban's a great defenseman. Brendan Gallagher, by the way, you know how much I like Gallagher. Drew, shorter player.
Yeah.
Was a late draft pick. I think he was a fifth rounder, wasn't he? And I mean, he busts his balls every single shift. And like you said, I mean, there's a little bit of bad blood maybe between these guys.
Maybe.
But I have no problem with that. I mean, these guys are competitors. And I think that's just fun stuff.
I certainly don't have a problem with it whatsoever. I just think it's great back and forth between two guys who don't like each other, and then P.K. Subban and an organization that doesn't like each other. But then you have P.K. Subban, who's beloved in the city of that organization that doesn't like him. So it's a real interesting dichotomy. It's a real interesting triumvirate going on there between Subban, the players, the city, the organization, and everything. And I think it's only going to continue. I don't know when it ends, but it's not going to be anytime soon. I think time is what it's going to take to heal the wounds between all of these people. When we come back, Kelly McCrimmon, the assistant general manager of the Vegas Golden Knights, is set to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, Saturday morning. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN Radio 1290. Hoping to get a hold of Vegas Golden Knights assistant general manager Kelly McCrimmon. He's set to be calling into us, so as soon as he does that, we'll bring him to you here on the program. This segment of the show, though, brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, he's in town. He was here last night as well. Noah Gardenswartz, great comedian.
Easy for you to say, Drew.
Easy for me to say, indeed. Noah was quite easy. The Gardenswartz was a little bit more complicated. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com. Two tickets tonight, two shows tonight, 7:15 and 10 p.m. Still waiting on Kelly McCrimmon to give us a shout, here on the program. You know, a little bit of trade deadline discussion, you know, going on throughout the NHL. I mean, there was one trade earlier this week. That was the Nikita Soshnikov trade.
And we just talked to Michael Trakos about that on Wednesday, whether or not the Leafs were going to trade Soshnikov because he was playing the majority of the season in the AHL. So no surprise there. And the Blues didn't give up much to get him.
No, giving up only a 2019 fourth-round pick for him. So well worth the cost to acquire him.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to be joined by Vegas Golden Knights assistant general manager Kelly McCrimmon. Kelly, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us, and welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Well, thanks for having me, guys.
Our pleasure, Kelly. Obviously, brought you on to talk about the team you're the AGM of. That's the Golden Knights, one of the greatest stories in sports, certainly this year and probably for this decade, just the performance that they're having. You know, Kelly, you're 10 points ahead of the San Jose Sharks. You're atop the Pacific Division. You're atop the Western Conference standings. It's looking quite likely, I can't say it's guaranteed just yet, but quite likely that you're going to be a playoff team come the end of the regular season. How do you and the brain trust of the Golden Knights prevent any sort of, not apathy, but how do you keep the guys motivated throughout the next 20 or so games as you head into what you hope to be a lengthy playoff run?
Well, it's been a real exciting season for our team, and certainly motivation hasn't been an issue right from day one. Every day is new for us because we're an expansion franchise. I think that our coaching staff, led by Gerard Gallant, has done a great job of really having our team develop an identity, have real good chemistry as a group, and we know also it can change in a hurry. So we've done a real good job of keeping our focus in the short term, the next game that we play, and it's served us well so far.
Kelly, as you know, we're about 9 days away from the NHL trade deadline, and we're not going to ask you what the Golden Knights have planned, but with 9 days to go here, for yourself and George McPhee, what are those 9 days going to look like? Because I imagine there are going to be a lot of meetings, but take us inside of the Golden Knights brain trust and what the next week or so is going to look like.
Well, I think the next 10 days for our organization will look a lot like what you see going around, every team. We'll have our pro staff coming in next week for meetings that will lead right up to the deadline. And, I expect most teams will do the same over the course of the year. You've, identified what you think the strengths of your own team are. You've identified where you'd like to improve if you can. And, the one thing with this process is when it all shakes out on the 26th and the deals that are made, there will have been a whole bunch of discussion that didn't lead to any moves, and yet it's part of the process of seeing if there's deals to be had. So that's what we'll that's what we'll put our time into here next week, and as I said, I think that's pretty reflective of what you'll see going on around the entire NHL.
Kelly was the first player signed by the Golden Knights. Reed Duke, a player you're obviously very familiar with with his time in with Brandon Wheat Kings. He's now going to the AHL. How nice is it for Reed to finally get an opportunity to start playing after dealing with an injury for most of the season?
Well, we're really happy to get Reed to Chicago and get him playing. He had a real good training camp with our team and had an injury where he required surgery. We kept him in Las Vegas for all of his rehab, so he's been sort of on our watch the entire season, and seeing him every day, you can tell he's real excited to get on his way to Chicago. And our goal and the decision to make surgery, I guess, was to make sure that it wasn't an issue that was going to linger or be a problem for him as his career unfolds. We did the right thing, I think, in terms of having surgery, and now we're hoping that he can get a couple of months of hockey under his belt and take that out of his first year pro.
Kelly McCrimmon is our guest here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. Kelly is the assistant general manager of the Vegas Golden Knights. Kelly, Jonathan Marchessault came over in the expansion draft and in the offseason from the Florida Panthers, and recently the Golden Knights signed him to a six-year contract extension worth $30 million. Another one of those great stories that are just up and down the Golden Knights roster. This is a guy who's having a career year after having a breakout season last year in Florida. Over a point a game this season. This is a guy who's a little bit older in that he's 27 years old, but in signing him to that six-year contract, did you sort of look at his career and say, this isn't a guy who's got a ton of hockey miles on him per se, and that's why we're comfortable giving him, say, a six-year deal that'll extend into his early to mid-30s?
Yeah, we were real comfortable with it. He's played so well, and he had a real breakout season last year in Florida where he put up 30 goals. Working with him day to day, one of the things that is really evident in his game and his approach is he's extremely competitive and just really trying to get better all the time. He's got great chemistry with his line mates, William Karlsson and Riley Smith. Collectively, they've had a tremendous season, and he's a core player for us and a guy that we feel very fortunate to have been able to acquire an expansion, and now to be able to have him under contract for the next 6 years, we think is going to be a real good player for our team for a long time.
And Kelly, you just mentioned William Karlsson, and I agree with Drew. There's so many good stories on this Vegas Golden Knights team, and so many players having career years. Karlsson's up to 30 goals on the season. He might even get up to 40 goals on the season. Why has it worked out so well for him this year? This was a player who was a higher draft pick, but it just didn't seem to work out as well for him in the Blue Jackets organization.
Well, I think that our team, every player is in a situation where they have more responsibility on our team than they did on the team that they came from. I think that's one of the things that's really been interesting to watch and has really contributed to the year that we've had. So in William's case, he was a real important player in Columbus. He was their third-line center. He killed penalties. He was a very good defensive player, and just had never, ever been put in a situation where he had the opportunity to be the type of offensive player that he's been. So, to his credit, when the opportunity did present himself, he knocked the door down in terms of what he has shown he's able to do. He scored 6 goals last year. He just scored his 30th here the other night. As you mentioned, he might get close to 40. And really, when you watch him play, his hockey sense is just elite. And, as I touched on already, the line there that has been together all year, those players have great synergy and really complement each other extremely well. So just a great story with what Will has accomplished this year, and we're real encouraged with his play.
You know, Kelly, there's numerous players we could touch on, but one who's having, who's already about to eclipse his career numbers is David Perron. You're his fifth team in the NHL, but he really seems to have found a home with the Golden Knights. What can you say about David Perron's season so far for your team?
Well, David has had a good NHL career, and in our team, in our dressing room, he has a leadership role because he's an older player. He's had success a lot of other places, and he's played primarily with Eric Halla and James Neal, and he's scored a lot of big goals. He's scored overtime goals. He can really protect the puck and make plays. Brings to the table for us.
You know, Kelly, as owner of the Brandon Wheat Kings, and with the season winding down, the Wheat Kings are getting ready for the playoffs here. What's it been like for you, trying to keep an eye on your WHL franchise, but also spending the majority of your time focused on the Golden Knights?
Well, day to day, my work is with the Golden Knights, but certainly. The Wheat Kings are very near and dear to me. That's where I worked for many years, and as you mentioned, still own the team. So I watch all of the games online. I keep in touch with people on the hockey operations side, and obviously still have a hand in the business side. So you live and die with two teams, I guess, basically, the team that I'm working for right now, and also, of course, the Wheat Kings, which have been a big part of my life.
Kelly, you'll be happy to know, by the way, that we have Brandon Crow on regularly to talk about the Wheaties.
Oh, very good.
Kelly, we'll let you go on this last question, and then we sort of started the interview talking about the playoffs, and it's clear that the Golden Knights are likely, more than likely, to be a playoff team. You look at that home record for your franchise, and you look at the home ice advantage that you guys have created there at T-Mobile Arena, 21-4-2. I know you probably don't try and get too far ahead of yourself, but have you taken an opportunity, maybe just for a couple minutes or a couple seconds, to sit back and just think what that playoff atmosphere is going to be like at T-Mobile Arena when the regular season concludes in that first week of April, and you get that first home playoff game, and the atmosphere that's going to be like in Vegas?
Well, it's a tremendous building to play in, and our crowds have been, we've sold out every game, and just how excited the fans are, and a lot of visiting teams have contingents of fans that come, which I think only adds to the atmosphere. But players from our team and others talk about it as being one of the most special buildings that they've ever played in. So if we can get to the point where we're playing playoff games, certainly we'll be excited to do it in front of our fans, who have really embraced our team.
Kelly McCrimmon is the assistant general manager of the Vegas Golden Knights. Kelly, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks for joining us again here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks for having me, guys.
Take care, Kelly. Thanks again. When we come back, we'll talk about some of the latest trade rumors surrounding the Winnipeg Jets as we're 9 days away from the NHL trade deadline. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
nice little Saturday here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290.
Are you going to Bed Bath & Beyond after this?
I don't know if I'm going to have enough time.
Oh, but you know you'll have enough time for?
What's that?
Jets practice 10 minutes.
Starting at top of the hour.
Then? Is KFC still open?
And then the Moose game.
Moose game at 7. Yeah, rematch with?
I'm sorry?
Rematch with? The Grand Rapids Griffins.
Sorry, you got me on champions. That one.
Way to give 110%, Marissa.
I was watching Old School. I think it was on last Saturday.
It's on every night.
Yeah. It's, you know, my wife is a big fan of Will Ferrell, but Old School isn't her favorite Will Ferrell movie, which is, I think, a shame, because Old School is probably one of my favorite.
Pretty much every I can guess what her favorite movie is.
Favorite Will Ferrell movie?
Anchorman.
It's either Anchorman or Talladega Nights. I'm not sure which it is. I don't try not to discuss it with
Ricky
her.
Ricky Bobby?
Yes.
Yeah, that's from Talladega Nights.
I know, Ricky Bobby.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got it. I understood. But anyways, I'm an old school guy, both the movie and in, you know, character, I guess.
Well, you did grow up in the 20s.
Exactly. Saw that coming from a mile away. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. In case you missed any of the show, you can download it. It's available on our website, illegalcurve.com. It'll be available on tsn1290.ca.
Do you think we're still going to be doing the show in our 80s, by the way?
In our 80s?
Like, when we're octogenarians, are we going to be doing the show in our wheelchairs?
How many Stanley Cups will the Jets have won at that point, Ezzy?
I'd be surprised if, well, I mean.
I feel like we're just, Illegal Curve is going to be us doing the show, like, throwing fruit at each other.
Isn't that what it currently is? We just throw donuts instead of fruit. Except we won't be able to eat donuts when we're 80. We'll just have to, we'll have a healthier diet. You know, you'll provide us with a rotten fruit.
And we're just going to hit each other with our canes.
Yeah, as you'll like, still be buying fruit at 7-Eleven.
What was that? The great CFL fight. Was that Angela Mosca and don't you remember? It's all played over the top 10s.
I don't know specifically, but I know what you're talking about.
Yes, the Joe Cap. Thank you, Rory. Producer Rory coming in hard there with the answer to that question. Jets are interested in Patrick Maroon, allegedly. This is according to Darren Dreger. I'll read the quote. The Winnipeg Jets are definitely interested in Patrick Maroon from the Edmonton Oilers, and the Boston Bruins are interested as well. I don't think either team is really going to want to have to throw in a first-round draft pick to acquire Patrick Maroon, but both teams most definitely have the young assets to be involved in that trade conversation. So both Winnipeg and Boston paying close attention to what Oilers general manager Peter Chiarelli is doing.
Yeah, what is he doing?
Well, I mean,
what is he going to do? What is Peter Chiarelli going to do? You've made some pretty big moves here over the last couple of years. You traded for Adam Larson. You had to give up Taylor Hall.
Yeah.
You traded Jordan Eberle for Ryan Strome. You've signed Milan Lucic. You've signed some other players. And, I mean, this season has been an unmitigated disaster, Drew. You know that.
Mm-hmm.
You wonder how many moves he makes. And, you know, Mark Letestu is another guy whose name is out there. I don't think the Oilers are going to make major moves. But, you know, when you talk about Patrick Maroon, you know, Patrick Maroon is an interesting case because late draft pick. And he really started to come into his own with the Anaheim Ducks, you know, in his third year in the National Hockey League, and was a big piece of their team there before coming over to Edmonton and scored 27 goals last year playing alongside Connor McDavid for a lot of that. And, you know, I've said this before, I have no problem with the Jets bringing in a guy like Patrick Maroon because...
Should it cost a first-round pick, though?
No.
It seems like that would be a steep price for a guy who's a pure rental right now.
Well, it's a late first-rounder, though, so you know, maybe you give up a late first-rounder. But a guy like Maroon, I think, you know, he could play on your second line. He could play on your third line. For me, most likely, he's going to play on one of your bottom two lines. But if you don't have to give up a lot to get him, I mean, he's got good hands. He can put the puck in the net. So you put him with skilled players. You know, he can score. I realize that, you know, he's got limitations. He's not the fastest player.
Well, let me ask you about the speed component, because the Jets are a pretty fast team, as we all know.
Well, the Oilers are a pretty fast team as well.
Well, the Oilers are fast with McDavid. I mean, the rest of the team is actually not that fast. Dreisaitl, too. But the rest of the team is not that fast. That's been part of the problem, is that, you know, guys like Milan Lucic don't have the foot speed necessary to keep up in the NHL nowadays. Could you foresee that being an issue with Maroon if they bring him over, that he's just not able to play at the pace necessary to be with the Jets, you know, top forwards?
No, I don't have any issues with that.
You don't think that's an issue?
He scored 27 goals playing with one of the fastest guys in the league, right? I mean, let's be honest. I mean, not every player on your team, guys, is going to be Nikolai Ehlers.
What? I thought every guy on your team was going to be Nikolaj Ehlers.
And, you know, I realize what you're saying. I think the Oilers have other guys on the team that are quick. I mean, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins is a good skater. I think that back end is pretty mobile. But you're right. I mean, it's not necessarily as fast as a team as the Jets. But I wouldn't have any problems or any concerns with that. And I think the Jets, if they do acquire Patrick Maroon or a player like Patrick Maroon, a more physical player, I mean, they know that he's not going to be the speediest guy.
Sure.
And for all the criticisms of a guy like Milan Lucic, Lucic isn't the fastest guy, but he finds a way to make it work. And a lot of people are criticizing that contract, but I mean, Lucic isn't the reason why the Oilers are where they are. I mean, there's a plethora of reasons why the Oilers are where they are. The goaltending hasn't been great. I mean, the secondary scoring hasn't been great.
Mm-hmm.
I think that group of defensemen, you know, leaves a little bit to be desired there. I mean, I like Oscar Klefbom and I like Adam Larson, but as far as I'm concerned, they don't have a number one defenseman. It's a bunch of number two and number three defensemen.
It was interesting. I was reading, I think, a quote from Milan Lucic this week, and he talked about how he's too heavy. And that his off-season goal, because it's clear that their season's going to end in the first week of April, is that he needs to get down to, I think he said he needs to get down to about 225.
Okay, well, why weren't people saying that last year then? I mean, people weren't saying that about Milan Lucic last year.
Oh, he's a year older.
Well, it just bothers me when a team is struggling and then they start to blame it on a guy's weight. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, Lucic, maybe that contract, maybe they gave him too much, Drew.
They did.
But I mean, Lucic is a big guy.
Well, it's funny. I saw something.
I mean, what do you want him to go down to 175 pounds?
No,
he's a power forward.
I saw something on Twitter as well. It's talking about how, I don't remember who it was, a commentator came out and said, I think it was Georges Laroque. Georges Laroque came out and said that the problem with the Oilers is culture, that none of them have any heart. It's culture this, you know, culture that. And somebody responded and said, it's the same team as last year, pretty much. They have almost the identical roster. So how was it that they were fine culture-wise last year, but this year it's a culture problem as opposed to just maybe a skill problem or the players have taken a step back for whatever reason? So which I thought to be pretty reasonable commentary when you talk about, you know, the culture argument, you know, it happens so often in Edmonton and a lot of cities here too. It was the culture. It was the culture of the Atlanta Five for so long. Well, maybe what happened was it wasn't culture. They just got better players around them, and all of a sudden the culture wasn't the issue anymore.
That's what I think it is. And let's be honest, I don't think anybody saw this coming for the Oilers. But the reality is, guys, it's tough to win in the National Hockey League. I mean, you look at the Montreal Canadiens. They've taken a step back. There are other teams aside from the Edmonton Oilers. They're not the only team that has taken a step back this year. The Columbus Blue Jackets are another team.
Sure.
They might miss the playoffs this year. So you can't necessarily, you know, pin it on one or two players. I mean, yeah, sure, Lucic isn't having a great year. He's not having as good of a year as he was having last year, but you could say the same about some other players on this team as well. I mean, I think they've really missed Jordan Eberle. And I don't think, you know, all due respect to Ryan Strome,
he's
not as good as Jordan Eberle.
Well, you can if you want to pinpoint a problem then, if it's not culture, it's, you know, poor decision-making from the general manager, I would argue. You've made two, what I would describe as two bad trades.
Taylor Hall.
Taylor Hall and Jordan Eberle. Those are two trades that the Adam Larson trade looked a little bit better last year, but this year Adam Larson has been, you know, what he is. And so Taylor Hall, who earlier in the first hour of the show we talked about as a potential MVP candidate, given what he's doing in New Jersey, Jordan Eberle playing very well for the New York Islanders. So if you want to pinpoint a problem, you know, maybe you look in the front office and say, your general manager traded away two core pieces and got back a bunch of players who've been lousy in return.
I suspect if you look at the Oilers' Twitter and a lot of the people who cover the team, they would suggest that the front office is a big part of this problem.
Yeah, I would agree with you there completely, Dave. So it's not necessarily culture, Georges Laroque. It's a lack of talent evaluation or a poor job on the talent evaluation side of things. That's it for the Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to all of our guests. Kelly McCrimmon, Vegas Golden Knights Assistant General Manager, Kristen Anderson of the Calgary Herald, George Richards of the Columbus Dispatch, Matthew DeFranks of the South Florida Sun Sentinel, and Mike Kelly of TSN and NHL Network. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, and on our website, or just subscribe wherever you get your podcast, get it sent to your device each and every week. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Rory doing a great job, for Dave Manuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.